Yes, I grew up in the Delta, Mississippi, and a place called Ruleville. It was Fannie Hamer's hometown, who was my godmother. Mrs. Hamer and her husband, Pap Hamer, sharecropped with my grandmother and grandfather. My grandmother and Mrs. Hamer worked for rich white families like the help. Mrs. Hamer was the cook. My grandmother took care of the kids. My granddad barbecued for James Eastland and John Stennis and Ross Barnett and J.P. Coleman and all those folk. So I got a chance to be around them when I was a kid. We lived on the corner of a street called Weber Street. Weber Street is now renamed for my grandmother, Sarah Sanders Lane. But what is famous about that street, for those of you who will soon see the Till story, is that after Roy Bryant and J.W. Milam killed Emmett Till and were acquitted, they moved to Ruleville because they were run out of money by the white folks who felt that they brought too much negative publicity. So they moved across the street from me. So you had their store, which was on the corner of Weber Street and 49W. My house was the house behind them. And then after they moved to Ruleville, J.W. Milam became our deputy sheriff, which is very interesting. So I saw Miss Carolyn every day. So when you all go to see the Till story and you see J.W. and Roy Bryant, just realize that you met the guy who grew up across the street from them. I knew them before they killed Emmett because they were all straw bosses in the field, which brings me to my introduction of about the story of migration. The same bus that we used to go to the fields on to pick and chop cotton, it was the same bus that was used on the weekends to take people from Mississippi up to Chicago. So when we finished with the bus in the fields on Friday, they would take the bus and park the bus in front of a grocery store owned by an old gentleman by the name of S.E. Seals. And they would park the bus there on Friday evening, say about 8 or 9 o'clock. People would come and put their luggage on and pick their seats and tie their stuff on the top of it. And then with two drivers, the bus would pull off on early Saturday morning, 4 or 5 o'clock, and it would go to Chicago and drop off a load of folk and their stuff. And then that second driver would drive the bus back to Mississippi. And then on Monday morning, we would get on that same bus and we would go to the fields and pick and chop cotton. Now, why did people leave the South? Several things were going on. Number one, between 1910 and, say, 1917, about 3 million people left the South going north. Some people would go to Chicago, other people would go to Detroit, some people would go to New York, but most of the people went to Chicago. And the funny thing about Chicago is that they would come back, everybody wanted to go to Chicago. That was a big joke that people would tell about Chicago. They were so hyped up on Chicago until there was a guy who moved from Mississippi to Chicago and he stepped off of a bus and he found a $5 bill laying on the street. And he refused to pick it up because he said, "I'm not working today." Okay? So, but what happened was that in Chicago, there were all of these social entities that were put in place for African Americans when they got there. How did they find out about them? Through the Chicago Defender, which is a black newspaper, very popular in the Mississippi Delta, and through Ida B. Wells. Ida B. Wells could tell you in her paper, Ida B. Wells Barnett, I should say, who could tell you where you could go to get acculturation. She would tell you where you could go to learn how to take some of that Mississippi lazy tongue out of your accent. They would tell you how to not use those idiosyncrasies that demonstrated them, that told them that you were straight from the country. So as people began to grow, to go there, and more family members got there, then more people began to follow them up. Now, it was very interesting. Everybody wanted to go to Chicago because everybody who came back from Chicago had a processed hair style. okay? And they were always driving a big Cadillac. Now, we thought they owned the Cadillac, okay? We didn't realize that they were renting the Cadillac, and people would put their money together and come down. But why would they really want a Cadillac? Aha, because we got commodities down there. I used to stand in my, Carl and I were talking about this. I used to stand in line with my grass sack to get the commodities, the raisins and the cheese and the flour and the powdered milk and all that stuff. Well, when these people went back to Chicago, that trunk would be loaded down to the ground almost with cheese and powdered milk and canned, all the stuff that we got. So I would think, if they're so rich, why are they taking all this stuff back to Chicago with them? But nevertheless, keep in mind, the Great Migration was about jobs. It was about a better life. And people believed they could have a better life in Chicago in particular. Why? Why did they want to leave the South? Well, the cotton picker was introduced, the mechanical cotton picker. So after a while, you were no longer needed on plantations to pick and chop cotton because you had mechanical cotton pickers. So people began to leave and seek a better life for themselves. And then all of the social acculturation projects were in Chicago waiting for you. The sad thing about this for children, though, was that you would have friends who you would see on Friday, and you would have no idea that on Monday morning, if you went to their house, there would be nothing there. They would have packed up what they had left that they didn't give away and placed it on that bus that was parked out there, and they would go to Chicago. Now, how did we know about the bus? There was an old man named Doc Warren. Doc Warren lived across the street from the Milam Brothers store in Ruleville. Doc Warren was considered to be an eccentric, weird kind of little guy. He wore a tam to the side, and he wore a bandana. He wore overalls, a starched white shirt, and brogans. Everybody thought he was crazy. But Doc Warren painted the insides of his screens gray. He painted his house red, black, and white. Okay? So people, and he had a big barber's chair on his front porch that he would sit in. Now, people thought Doc Warren was crazy. Why did he paint his screens gray? Because he could look at the Milam Brothers store, and he could see out, but they couldn't see in. Okay? Now, why did he put this light bulb over his porch? Sometimes it would be green, sometimes it would be yellow, sometimes it would be red. People say he's drinking that moonshine again. Well, actually, what he was doing, if the Milam Brothers were in town, the light was red. If the Milam Brothers were out hunting deer and they would be away for a while, the light was yellow. If the Milam Brothers were in the store drinking with their buddies, the light was red. Now, old man Essie Seals could just look out from his store and he could see whether it was safe to go to the Milam Brothers store or whether or not. So he knew when to open his store and when to close it. Everybody could actually go by the Essie Seals store before they left and get their bologna sandwiches and their cheese sandwiches and their Coca-Cola and put them in their shoebox, get on that bus and go. Now, we use this shoebox thing in migration all the time because you couldn't go to the bathrooms. You couldn't eat in the restaurants, so everybody had a shoebox. So in that shoebox, you would put your water, your chicken, your pound cake, your apples, and that was how you could make the trip wherever you were going. Migration was a way for African Americans in particular to improve their quality of life. And once they got to, particularly in Chicago, and I talk about Chicago because most of the people from the Delta and Mississippi left and they migrated to Chicago. But I want to say, before I just leave talking about that, I want you to keep in mind, we hear about what happened in Tulsa, Oklahoma, A lot of people don't realize Tulsa, Oklahoma, Oklahoma was built for Native Americans and African Americans. Nobody expected African Americans to get as rich as they became. So they ended up burning, you heard about the Tulsa riots and all that. So those people then migrated from Oklahoma, where my great-great-grandfathers went. They migrated back east toward Arkansas, Mississippi. If they had land, whatever they were doing, they continued to do that. Their children, their great-grandchildren moved further east. That was how my family got to Mississippi. And then after that, people went north. We never went north because my grandmother was smart enough, although she graduated from Alcorn College, had a college degree. She became a nanny. Now, why did she do that? Because the white landowner's doctor was our doctor. I dressed better than my classmates when I was a little kid because I got hand-me-down clothes from Jewish families. And I tell people I have a special relationship with the Jewish community. Why? Because of the way they treated me when I was a kid. We stayed because we were fortunate enough to be associated with Jewish families, which made it possible for my grandmother to work, my granddaddy to always have something to do. When he wasn't barbecuing, we were building outhouses and we were building tombstones for people. But the Great Migration did teach us a lot and show us a lot because we would listen to the stories from the people who came back. But the Great Migration saw between 1910 and, say, about 1970, the movement of at least 6 million people from the South up north in order to change their lives. So I didn't migrate to Baltimore that way. I'll end by saying I came to Baltimore after meeting Mike Douglas in 1972. How many people out there old enough to remember Mike Douglas? Oh, okay. Well, I had gone to Columbia Grad School of Journalism. I'd gotten a fellowship and thought I was all cool. I went to Columbia, got a fellowship, same one Gerardo Rivera got. And I got back to Mississippi, and my news director saw me, and he says, "John, you're back early." He said, "Come in and see me. Come in and see me before you go." I said, okay. He said, "Well, why did you come in?" And I said, "Well, I want to talk to the guys about what I was going to teach them." He said, "Uh-huh." He said, "Come see me." I went to see him. He said, close the door. He said, "Listen, we're very proud of you. We're so happy for you about that fellowship you got to Columbia Grad School of Journalism. But listen, Mississippi ain't ready for that. So we want you to leave all that newfangled stuff you learned in New York in New York." I was like crushed, okay? Well, it just so happened that I took over promotion and advertising. Mike Douglas came down to do the state fair. Well, guess who was responsible for putting together his band and getting him a place to live and renting the limousine? I was. He saw me and he said to his publicist, "Bob, it's a colored kid. It's a colored kid." I didn't mind. I was glad to see Mike Douglas. But one of the things he said to me, he said, "I got to get you out of Mississippi." He said, "Who will inspire you in 2 years? He said, "As I play golf with people around the country, I'm going to tell them about you. And if you find a place that you think you could live and you could work, let me know." So I went to KDK in Pittsburgh. News director in Pittsburgh told me, "We like you, you're great. Mike Douglas is our star. If he wants you to have the job, there's nothing I can do." He said, "But I don't have time to hold your hand. You'll be the first black in management up here, and you're not even from Pittsburgh. So understand my situation." I said, okay. Well, I ended up coming to Baltimore. I come to Baltimore, land at the airport. A cab driver brings me into the city. He says, "Young man, what are you doing here?" I said, "Well, I'm here for an interview, WJZ. I may take the job." I said, "But I don't know if they have any soul food here." He said, "What time do you have to be there?" I said, 2:00. He said, "I'm going to take you somewhere." Okay. He took me to Leon's Pig Pen. Well, I got greens, catfish, barbecue, cornbread, candy jams. Asked for some buttermilk. And he said, what? When I got that meal, I really would have taken the job for free. But I decided to, and I stayed here. I came here, I went to work here, I stayed here. I've always lived in Columbia because I didn't know I knew anybody out there. But I stayed. So my migration to Baltimore was the perfect transition for me. And I'll end by saying most of what happened in the civil rights movement across the country, particularly in Mississippi, grew out of what we learned about what was going on here in Baltimore. If you keep in mind, Hiram Revels, who became the first black senator, keep in mind he got his training in Upton at Union Baptist Church. Thank you.
Thank you.